Good evening. Good evening. Welcome back. I call to order the regular meeting of the Grover Beach City Council, Monday, July 28th, 2025. This meeting may also be viewed on cable channel 20 in Grover Beach and is available on live streaming on www.slo-span.org. Members of the public may provide public comment during the meeting by attending the meeting or calling 805-321-6639, and the phone line is now open. We do not have a flag salute. Actually, you know what? The twins are going to come up here and present our flag salute. We have Cassidy and Kennedy Scacinocci coming up here to present the flag salute. So please stand with me. Thank you. That was off the cuff. Thank you so much. All right. Now for the roll call. City Clerk Sims, please.
Councilmember Tuggle.
Present.
Councilmember Weirich.
Present.
Mayor Pro Tem Robert.
Here.
Mayor D.
Here.
And let the record show Councilmember Macoria Driscoll is absent.
Thank you so much. We do have a quorum even with the absence. So we will now move on to closed session announcements. City Attorney Lamelli.
Thank you, Mayor, Council. There were no reportable actions taken during closed session.
Okay. Now on to agenda review. Council members, do any of you have any questions or changes you would like to make?
No.
If not, can I have a motion?
I move to approve the agenda.
I'll second it.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, we have consensus. I was also an aye. Sorry, I forgot to say aye. So we have consensus. We do not have any items for our ceremonial calendar. No presentations, so we will now move on to public communications. Our meetings are designed to proceed in an organized and efficient manner to effectively conduct city business. The council welcomes and values public comments, which can be shared at the designated time from the podium using the microphone. The council requests that all comments be addressed to the council as a whole and that speakers refrain from directing individual comments at staff members. To maintain an orderly process, we kindly ask all attendees refrain from creating disruptions during the meeting, interrupting speakers who are addressing the council, or impeding on the council's ability to conduct business. Should disruptions occur, the council may need to take certain measures, such as calling a recess, clearing the chambers, or in rare circumstances, canceling the meeting. We greatly appreciate your understanding and cooperation in maintaining a productive environment that serves our entire community effectively. During this time, the council will allow for public communication. Any member of the public may address the council for a period not to exceed 3 minutes total on any item of interest within the jurisdiction of this council. The council will listen to all communications. However, in compliance with the Brown Act, the council cannot act on or discuss items not on the agenda. So I will now open up a general public comment. Does anybody want to come up and speak? I do not have any speaker slips. Seeing nobody come to the podium, is there anybody on the line?
Yes, we have Mr. John Weisong.
All right. Hi, Mr. Weisong. I thought I heard him breathing. Mr. Weisong, are you there? We can hear you. Last call from Mr. Weisong. Mr. Weisong? All right, let's hang up, and then if he calls back, we can... Okay, we can open up general public comment back up again if we need to. Or can you put him in the queue and then bring him back on? Let's try that, okay. Hi, Mr. Weisong. Nope. Okay. All right. Okay. I will give him a call tomorrow and see what happened. And then if he calls back or anything like that, then maybe we can he can address the council at that time. So, okay, well, thank you. All right, so anybody else on the line? Okay, I will now close general public comment. We are now on to the consent agenda. The following routine items listed on the consent portion of the agenda are scheduled for consideration as a group. We have 10 items. There's a lot of them, so I'm not going to read them. If you want to see them, there's an agenda over on the table over there. So do we have any questions from council on the consent agenda at all? No? Okay, I will now open for public comments on the consent agenda. Seeing nobody come forward, is there anybody on the line? Okay, all right. You wanna try them again? Okay. Hi, Mr. Weisong. All right, I'm just gonna give him a call back tomorrow. Okay, sounds good. All right, we tried, okay. All right, so anybody else on the line? No, then I will now close public comments on the consent agenda. Council members, do you have any questions or comments or wanna pull an item at all? No? Okay, well then can I have a motion to adopt the consent agenda as presented?
I'll make a motion that we accept the consent agenda.
I'll second.
We have a motion and a second. May I have a roll call, please?
Mayor Pro Tem Robert.
Yes.
Councilmember Tuggle.
Yes.
Councilmember Weirich.
Yes.
Mayor D.
Yes.
Let the record show, Councilmember McCrory Driscoll is absent.
All right, perfect. That passed. So now we are on to our public hearings. The first item 11, is the first reading and introduction of an ordinance to amend the Grover Beach Municipal Code, Article 9 Development Code, et cetera, and I will bring it over to Community Development Director Martin.
Thank you so much. Megan Martin, Community Development Director, and I'm joined here by Mr. Kyle Bell, our Senior Planner. We'll be running through the Development Code amendments for you this evening, and providing you with some context on what the package shows so that our audience also knows how to follow along at home if they're watching at home. And with that, I'll turn it over to Mr. Bell.
All right, thank you. Good evening. Tonight we'll be presenting an overview of recent updates to the city's development code. These updates include our effort to align local regulations with evolving state laws, particularly those related to housing, land use, and coastal compliance. Since the City Council adopted the development code last fall, staff has worked to incorporate feedback from the Department of Housing and Community Development, or HCD, and the Coastal Commission. Our goal is to ensure that the code remains legally compliant, internally consistent. I'm having a little mouse issues. Hold on one second. There we go. Internally consistent and responsive to state mandates and local priorities. This evening's discussion focuses on the refinements made since the ordinance was last presented to council last February. We've separated the ADU regulated requirements as a separate report and presentation to allow for more focused review of the broader code updates. As part of the agenda packet this evening, a legislative draft was provided as an attachment to the report. As shown in the attachment, the changes are color-coded for clarity. Purple underlines reflect the original amendments presented to the City Council last February, whereas the red underlines indicate additional revisions made in response to direction from the Planning Commission, feedback from HCD, as well as Coastal Commission. The Community Development Department is committed to annually reviewing the Development Code to stay current with best practices and state requirements. This comprehensive update aims to align our local regulations with state housing and land use laws, reduce regulatory barriers, and improve clarity and consistency across the code. While many updates were introduced last fall, this report also includes revisions made in response to the Coastal Commission and HCD feedback. Because the project had not been certified by the Coastal Commission, we are revising and re-presenting the entirety of the update to ensure full compliance. To provide context, this project builds on the city's broader effort to modernize and streamline the development code. The process began with the adoption of the housing element in 2020, followed by a comprehensive update to the code in June of 2022, both supported by state grant funding. As part of these grant commitments, staff committed to conducting annual updates to ensure the code stays aligned with state law and best practices. In 2024, the next phase began. The City Council held a study session on May 28th, followed by a community workshop and survey on June 18th. Then on August 26, 2024, the City Council conducted the first reading of the ordinance, followed by the adoption of the second reading on September 9th. Because part of the city lies within the coastal zone, the ordinance is subject to review and certification by the Coastal Commission. However, the Coastal Commission now requires that all ADU-related amendments be submitted to HCD first. That referral was made by the city on September 12th. On December 24th, the HCD provided preliminary comments known as a flyover review. In response, staff revised the ordinance to align with state law and HCD's guidance. The revised ordinance was reintroduced to the City Council on February 26th. However, due to concerns about the proposed ADU height increase, Council remanded the item back to the Planning Commission for further review and discussion, which was held on July 1st. And that brings us to today's hearing. And to frame today's discussion, it's important to understand the key drivers behind these updates. First, recent state law legislation, particularly SB 1123, expands on urban lot subdivisions to include single-family residential zones. Second, the Coastal Act requires coordination with the Coastal Commission to protect coastal resources and align local policies with state requirements. Finally, evolving ADU laws, along with detailed HCD review, have prompted important clarifications and updates to the ADU regulations. Together, these mandates and agency reviews have shaped the proposed amendments. The proposed amendments on the screen focus on aligning the development code with recent state housing laws and incorporating HCD's guidance. First, ADUs are now permitted in industrial zones when accessory to an existing residential use, such as a live-work unit or supportive housing. Second, a note was added to the edge condition setback table clarifying that ADUs must follow state law, including the 4-foot setback for side and rear setback requirements. Third, to comply with SB 1123, the urban lot subdivision standards were updated to now allow for the R1 zones on vacant lots. Finally, three key definitions, ADUs, accessory structures, and single unit dwellings were revised for state law consistency to provide clarity throughout the code. These next amendments improve clarity and consistency in applying development standards and processing permits. First, under height limits, a minor change now allows for elevator towers to exceed the height limits through a use permit approval process, similar to the architectural features, which is currently in the code. Second, a cross-reference to administrative coastal development permits was added within the administrative development permits section to clarify when coastal regulations apply. And third, the administrative coastal development permit section now references both administrative permits and zoning clearance requirements to ensure consistency for procedures for both projects in the coastal zone. That was a mouthful, but I'm happy to explain if there's questions. All right, so these revisions to the development code are administrative in nature and will not cause any direct or indirect physical changes to the environment. As a result, they are exempt from review under CEQA. On July 1st, 2025, the Planning Commission reviewed and the revised development code amendments and expressed general support for the ordinance as presented. No changes were recommended to the draft ordinance. Tonight's recommendation is for the City Council to consider the first reading and introduction of the amendments to the development code and schedule the second reading for the adoption of the ordinance and resolution authorizing the local coastal program amendment. Following City Council's recommendation, the final adoption will be scheduled for August 25th, 2025. Preceding the adoption, staff will submit the local coastal program amendment to the Coastal Commission, and then the ordinance will become effective the day after Coastal Commission approval. And that concludes staff's presentation. I'm available for any questions.
Thank you for the presentation. All right, council members, do you have any questions? Start to my right. Any questions to my left?
Yeah, and this is just one to clarify. When you say best practices that you're trying to align with, in addition to state law changes, what kind of reference points do you have as far as where those best practice standards come from? Since there's different sources where that could be from, but just for us to better understand within the profession?
There's probably a few examples. I might be able to pull up.
And you don't have to go through all of them, too, but just for reference points for us.
For instance, the administrative development permit requirements and the development permit requirements, there was a bit of ambiguity between the two, identifying which is appropriate for lower thresholds versus higher thresholds. So we identified other jurisdictions and in how they reviewed certain scale of development, and we aligned it to match. And then we also looked at, so for instance, four units or less is appropriate through a administrative development permit versus more units would be appropriate through a planning commission review of a development permit. And so things like that were identified throughout the code for just further consistency with our at a regional level as well as local practice.
Thank you.
All right, and mine is just kind of a clarifying question, and it's regarding the height of an elevator shaft, because I don't build elevators and I'm not an engineer, so I just want to make sure that I'm just hoping that nobody will take advantage of that one little piece. So is it possible a developer may come in and say, we know that the height of the building can be this, but I want to go 50 feet above that. Is that just so unrealistic? And I just want to make sure that we're clear on that. And
I think the easiest answer is to say, yes, that's unrealistic. I do want to throw in the shade of gray that planning and state housing law continues to throw down our way to the local level, which is if there's a state density bonus requirement, I mean, folks can ask for something to have that maximum amount of density that they want on their property. But let's just stick with the simplest answer. And if it is unrealistic, it likely won't meet the required legal findings that have to be made in order to support the approval of that request. So process-wise, what does that mean? Somebody submits an application. They want to go 50 feet. Well, let's say they want to go 20 feet.
Yeah.
They want to go 20 feet higher with their elevator tower. What we would look at is it consistent with the general plan? Is it consistent with the development code? Is it compatible with those properties around it? And we look at whether or not it's actually reasonable for what's being proposed. And if we staff cannot make those findings, but that individual wants to move forward with it anyways, we would take it to Planning Commission on a recommendation of denial. And Planning Commission would either support staff's findings for denial or they would make the findings to support it. So that's kind of how that procedurally would work.
Perfect. Okay,
so
thank you.
There's always an approval process for that exemption.
If somebody wants to push it, yes, there's always a means for them to move forward, but it would not have a positive recommendation from staff.
Right.
But somebody can't build it without.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
It's not assumed. It's just that
Correct.
They can ask for it.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you so much. That was my...
And just as far as, and maybe this because obviously the timing of when this went to the Planning Commission and when this action happened, as far as different parts in state law, since this gets updated annually, a lot of the new CEQA exemptions, do you want to kind of just touch upon that too? Because obviously a lot of that's probably going to be coming more further before us in the future.
As far as maximizing height for different types of projects or?
Oh, just within development in general too, how a lot of, when state law, when that one bill got passed and stuff too on, was it June 30th and stuff for that?
AB 130.
Yes.
Yeah, so Council Member Weirich's correct. As it relates to Assembly Bill 130, our governor passed a budget bill, and within that budget bill, it included numerous housing laws that were quite unexpected, but we're getting through it with our great city attorney's team. But one of those actually is relating to California Environmental Quality Act, CEQA, and that certain qualifying housing development projects are no longer subject to further environmental review when prior to June 30th of 2025, they would have otherwise been required to undergo quite a rigorous environmental analysis. If you qualify under this new assembly bill, you're subject to a statutory exemption, and we don't necessarily have any local authority over that.
Okay.
Yeah, that's a great one to bring up and reference.
Okay. Any other questions? No? Okay, well, I will now open up the public hearing. I do not have any speaker slips. Does anybody wish to come up and speak on this item? Item number 11. Go ahead.
When I was building, you bring the plans into the city, they do a plan check. They check everything out. Sometimes I had to make five changes out of my pocket. You know, they say, hey, you have to do this, do that. So is my understanding right? You guys are changing things after these buildings are built? I mean, there's three of them already had the elevator. Now you're having it. Aren't you guys like a year and a half behind? Shouldn't this have been talked about before they did the elevator shafts? And how did they even get them that high if they went through plan check? You know, the code hasn't changed as far as that I've reading or anything. So then I noticed there's no fire dampers. Isn't there supposed to be fire dampers in the ductwork that has a fuse that burns, shuts, so that oxygen doesn't pull it into the other units? There was none over there. And they have condensation lines dripping on the sidewalks over here. All that stuff's illegal in the state of California. Grower Beach isn't its own country or anything. I mean, you still have to stick to California rules and regulations. But the elevator, you can't just change things after they're already built. That kind of defeats the purpose. It should have been caught back when they were doing plan check. That's why we have a plan check. You know, and the builder he can't just come and put an elevator shaft later and go to Megan and say, hey, man, I'm sorry about that, but I'm going to do it. It's supposed to be all through plan check. There's engineering things. You're cutting a big hole in the middle of something that has bearing walls, roof load, all that, and fire. But I'm just amazed that these things just get passed. I mean, you guys make these rules and change the building code right here in the city of Grover Beach. It's kind of, whoa. But that's all. I mean, better watch what you guys are kind of doing and question some of these things, you know.
Thank you so much for your comments. Anybody else wish to come up and speak on this item? Seeing nobody come forward, is there anybody on the line?
No, not for this item.
Okay. We will now close the public hearing, and I'll bring it back to the comments that were just made. Are we correct that all of our elevator shafts are within the allotment? There was just one project that was over, and they went to the Planning Commission to be approved, all that stuff. Can you speak to that?
Correct. So when a building permit application is submitted, our team of engineers, building professionals, as well as our planners, take a look at the approved project what was approved at the Planning Commission, and compare it to what was submitted as part of the building permit application. That is where we caught this issue. This particular issue with the elevator was in plan check. So we went full stop and we said, how would you like to resolve this? And the applicant and their agent requested to increase that height. We then took that policy interpretation in front of the commission, and that is why you see that change as part of the development code updates today. So it was caught during plan review. The project is not built yet, and this typically, the public commenter is correct, this typically does not happen during construction, and if it did, they'd be required to reduce the height. But this got caught during plan check.
So we don't have any buildings that are under this that are currently built?
No.
Okay. All right. Any other questions? No? Okay. Well, then I will bring it back to the council for any comments and consideration. Does anybody want to start our discussion? Oh, yeah. Go ahead.
And I guess it's just this is just kind of how I interpret it, is that, you know, first off, thank you for working with us on that recommendation to send it to the Planning Commission, since there was enough time for them to get to review it and have their full discussions. And, you know, some recommendations came from it, too. And basically, you know, outside of some of the adjustments that were recommended and changed, too, I mean, this really looks more like what we discussed, you know, earlier this year, too. So I don't have anything in particular, you know, that to bring up to. I mean, the elevator issue and stuff has gone through the Planning Commission discussion quite a bit too. And I know, I've watched some of their meetings too to see how those deliberations went too. And I this is always tricky part too. I mean, I know that because of, you know, like the bill that we talked about too, like things are going to change even further too. So hopefully there's ways that, you know, before the next kind of big round comes up too, that when some of these changes occur, that even we could get it, you know, even if it's like an update briefing stuff on some of those things, even a one page or two, because I think that's going to be helpful when it comes to some of the residents, you know, communicating with us and vice versa on some of these things before it hits our agenda and kind of this big swirl. So that's just one little thought that came to mind too, but it looks like Jules had something more particular to say. Okay. So that was like my kind of general thought.
Yeah, I agree. The only thing, the only hesitation I had was on the elevator shaft. But since everything's going through its checks and balances, I'm comfortable with moving forward with this. And again, yeah, thank you for taking our recommendation, bringing it back to the Planning Commission just to go over it with them and move it forward back to us. So any other discussion?
No, I just think this is a good example of how it's supposed to work.
Absolutely.
So, yeah. 100%. Team effort for the, and thank you to the Planning Commission as well for their time and effort on this and staff. And
yeah.
So it makes this part kind of easy.
Yeah. So can I have somebody make a motion? And the recommendation is up there. Don't read it from the agenda. It's very big.
I move to accept, not adopt, or adopt. Do I have to read all of that?
The first one.
First reading of amendments to the Grover Beach Municipal Code, Article 9 Development Code and Local Coastal Program Amendment. And? Okay. Schedule the second reading to adopt the amendments to the Grover Beach Municipal Code, Article 9 Development Code and the resolution for Local Coastal Program Amendment.
Is that okay?
So, there's no adoption necessary. It's just introduction.
That's what I thought.
Oh.
It doesn't have an action word. So I didn't know which one to use.
So would you like consider instead? Okay.
Yeah. Consider. Right. Okay.
Okay.
Can I, do I have to reread the whole thing? I do.
Well, it's just an introduction. When it comes back, you'll approve it.
That's what I thought.
Oh, okay.
But it says roll call vote on
it
our
says
paper.
Roll call vote on my thing. So.
So I guess accept introduction and okay. Move on to the next meeting.
For we accept it and we would like it to come back for the second.
Okay, we have a motion. Can I have a second, please? So I have a motion. Can I have a second, please?
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Can I have a roll call, please?
Councilmember Tuggle.
Yes.
Councilmember Weirich.
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Robert.
Yes.
Mayor D.
Yes.
Let the record show. Councilmember Macquarie Driscoll is absent.
Thank you so much. We've been on break for a little bit, so thank you for your patience. All right, now on to item 12. This is another public hearing, the first reading and introduction of an ordinance to amend the Grover Beach Municipal Code, Article 9 Development Code, et cetera, et cetera. I will pass it back over to Community Development Director Martin and Senior Planner Bell.
All right, let's get set up here. Here we go. All right, thank you. This next presentation focuses on the proposed updates specific to the city's ADU regulations. These updates are part of the standalone ordinance that was separated from the broader development code update in order to respond directly to comments from HCD and ensure consistency with recent changes in state law. While the city initially adopted the ADU regulations last fall, HCD raised several comments requiring clarification. As a result, staff has revised the ordinance to reflect both technical refinements and practical updates as necessary to maintain compliance. We'll walk you through the key changes, explain the reasoning behind them, and outline the next steps. As part of the agenda packet this evening, we also provided a legislative draft that included in the report. As shown in the attachment, the changes were identified for clarity as purple underlines reflected the original amendments presented to the city last February. The red underlines indicated the additional revisions made in response to feedback from HCD. The ordinance has been updated to reflect specific guidance provided by HCD to ensure full compliance with state law. The first amendment is to the maximum number of ADUs permitted on, which is now permitted on both single unit and multi-unit properties, has been adjusted to match current state law allowances, including combinations of JADUs, interior attached and detached ADUs as well. Second, we revised the maximum height limitations for detached ADUs. These updates ensure that our local standards reflect what's currently required under state law, including higher allowances in areas near transit stations and flexibility for pitched roofs. Third, we've clarified that state-exempt ADUs are exempt from local objective design standards. This distinction is important to ensure that we do not unintentionally apply regulations that the state law explicitly preempts. In response to HCD's feedback, we've made several additional updates to the ADU regulations. The owner occupancy requirement for junior ADUs now includes exemptions for certain qualifying agencies and organizations such as government entities, land trusts, and nonprofits. consistent with state law. The prior requirement for an ADU covenant agreement has also been removed entirely, as it's not authorized under the state law. Meanwhile, one second here. Okay, here we go. Meanwhile, the JADU covenant agreement was amended to also reflect those same changes to owner occupancy exemptions. Lastly, we clarified that the alternative compliance language to explicitly state that the development standards shall not physically preclude construction of at least one attached or detached ADU of up to 800 square feet. This ensures our standards align with state mandates and don't create unintended barriers to ADU development. These revisions to the ADU ordinance are administrative in nature and will not cause any direct or indirect physical changes to the environment. As a result, they are exempt from review under the California Environmental Quality Act. And on July 1st, 2025, the Planning Commission reviewed the proposed ADU ordinance and supported the amendments as drafted with no recommended changes. However, at the hearing, the commissioners discussed broader concerns about state law ADU requirements, particularly the lack of parking requirements. They had suggested that the city consider future strategies to address potential neighborhood impacts. Staff is not proposing any changes at this time. However, council is welcome to direct staff to analyze this issue in more detail and return with potential policy options as a separate work effort, if appropriate. And tonight's recommendation is for the city council to consider the first reading and introduction of the amendments to the ADU regulations and schedule the second reading for the adoption of the ordinance and resolution authorizing the local coastal program amendment. And I believe, as for the next steps, following the city council's recommendation, the final adoption will be scheduled for August 25th, 2025. And preceding the adoption, staff will submit the local coastal program amendment to the Coastal Commission and the adopted ADU ordinance to HCD. The ordinance will become effective the day after Coastal Commission approval. And that concludes staff's presentation. I'm available for any questions.
All right, thank you so much. Any questions from our council members?
What is the current state requirements for ADUs and parking, or lack of requirements, if that's the case?
Yes, under the current state law, parking requirements are not required for an ADU if they're within a quarter mile, or a half mile of a bus stop. I have a map here that shows the city of Grover Beach with a little buffer. Sorry, there's a lot of backup slides for questions. Here we go. So this is a map of all the areas in Grover Beach that are covered by state law, not requiring parking requirements for ADUs. As you can see, there's just a tiny little gap. Yes.
Mm-hmm. So there, that couldn't be adjusted by a city?
Unless you wanted to remove bus stops, but that's, I shouldn't suggest that. Remove
bus stops. No, I'm not implying we're going to remove bus stops. But that is the jurisdiction of the state overrides our ability to determine parking for ADUs in our situation, correct?
Correct.
Any other questions? Go
ahead. And just for context, too, as far as ADUs within the city, kind of what's the numbers of, you know, people applying, permitting, construction, et cetera, just so we have that reference point.
Thank you for coming prepared.
No problem. Yes, so we have here a little exhibit from our general plan annual report. We report on the number of ADUs permitted every year as part of this report. As you can see here, from 2014 to 2024, we've seen a slow increase of the number of ADUs that have been permitted. Here we have a total of 70 between that 10 years. We have about 82 active or issued permits, so that's about 12 more for this year so far. And we have about another 22 still in process. So we're not sure exactly the number that will end at 2025, but some of those will be stretched out to 2026, I'm sure.
And there's a total of 51 that have been finaled in the community. So I think we did a little run of numbers earlier, but of the total number of residences within the city of Grover, census of 2020 says about 5,200 residences. We're at less than 2% total applications compared to total residents in Grover Beach.
And even though it's kind of self-explanatory, just in case someone looked at the slide and goes, oh my God, there's this huge jump there too. As far as, do you want to just kind of re-clarify the difference between single unit and multi-unit? Because the numbers are clear there too, but as far as the difference of what they're...
Oh, no problem. So that's that orange spike right there is reflective of the permits that were issued for Cleaver and Clark, 401 West Grand Avenue, which is the Palladium, as well as 402 West Grand Avenue, which is the Encore. And I believe there's a few other multifamily projects mixed in there as well. But that orange spike is representative of multifamily housing, which is two or more attached units or two or more units on a single property.
Thank you. And then when it comes back to the broader parking side, just for a comparison point, that you talked about how ADUs are exempt and stuff, as far as normal kind of residential parking within neighborhoods, what are the general parking requirements and how do those come into play? Just to, for us to understand the difference a little better.
Absolutely. So there's actually a state law that was introduced last year that limits cities to require no more than two parking spots for a single family residence. So any one of our R1 neighborhoods, we would not be able to require more than two parking spaces for a single family residence. And with no parking requirement for ADUs, there'd be no additional parking beyond that, beyond what the applicant or property owner chooses to add to their property on their own. There's also allowances for garage conversions without replacement parking. And so that's also an impact. The city of Garver Beach does allow for parking within the driveway. So if you were to convert your garage, you could still park your vehicles on your driveway without issue. But yes, that's what we see in our single family neighborhoods. There's different parking requirements for multifamily, and there's new ADU requirements as well.
Thank you.
Any other questions? No? Thank you for those were great questions, Councilmember Weirich. Thank you so much. Okay. I do not have any questions other than what was already asked, so we will now open up the public hearing. Does anybody wish to come up and speak on this item?
Good evening, Madam Mayor and Council.
Can you speak a little bit more into the microphone for me, please? Thank you.
Lauren Westfall, Grover Beach. With the parking situation, if you guys drive around town now, there will be, say, in front of my house, for instance, I can park two, maybe three cars without blocking my driveway. However, I have, you know, given the kid next door permission to park, and he takes up the whole spot where I can get three cars or two cars in. He takes one. Since the city is doing this, why not make identified parking spaces, basically those little lines that says you can park three cars into this little spot? And also, when you guys approved the Palladium, your webpage said that there was 48 parking spaces. However, there's actually only 42. 40 of those are for regular parking, two of those are for handicap. Then you have the three motorcycle spaces. Unless you're counting the bike rack, it doesn't count up to 48 parking spaces. You also said there's 11 street parking spaces. I can't figure out where the 11 street parking spaces are. And did the city stop the two-hour parking in front of that Palladium and the Encore next door, and it doesn't start until after the driveway? But there's a parking issue. There's a traffic issue. There's gonna be more traffic issues since the dunes are staying open. The city needs to identify these issues now and correct them. The other question I have, since I have another minute left, is with these ADUs, is the city requiring the property owner to install a meter and a sewer line separate for that ADU? Or if the property owner wishes to install, is the city going to allow it, especially for all the utilities? And if we approve 51 ADU permits already, plus 37 and the 59 for CCB, not counting the Astound, we're already looking at 147 new residents. So even though I know this is off topic, if with all these residents, you guys need to consider really quick now to approve and unfund a new police station separate from City Hall. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your comments. Anybody else wish to come up and speak on this item? And seeing nobody come forward, is there anybody on the line?
Yes, we have David Swift.
Okay. Hello, Mr. Swift, can you hear us? We have IT coming in.
That was a problem with the first person.
Mm-hmm. Do we need a recess so that we can figure this out? Mr. Swift, are you there? All right, let's recess for 5 minutes to see if we can figure this out. Thank you. And we are back. Thank you so much for that brief recess. So we will bring it back to Mr. Swift. He's on the line. And hopefully we're all good to go.
Good evening, Council. David Swift, North Grover.
Hi, we can hear you.
Go ahead. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you. Go ahead.
Great, thank you. So first off, I just wanted to commend staff on the revisions to the ADU ordinance. I think they did a really nice job of meeting the state law, accommodating the requirements, but also protecting the neighborhoods as best they could given the state mandates. And I think that took a lot of work on their part, and I think they did a nice job. As many have pointed out with regards to parking, because they no longer require parking, we are going to have a significant uptick in street parking in the neighborhoods. And there's probably no way to avoid that given the way the state law is. But it does seem completely inconsistent with the city's parking ordinance 2303, which basically restricted street parking to 72 hours, which means you either have to revise the street parking ordinance or just choose not to enforce it. And I'm assuming you'll probably revise the street parking ordinance so that as these ADUs go in and there's less and less residential parking, that people actually can park on the street without getting ticketed or towed. Otherwise, I think, you know, I think they did a good job on it given the challenges they were presented with. And that's all I have to say about that. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments as a resident of Grover Beach, Mr. Swift. Thank you so much. Okay, is there anybody else on the line?
Yes, we have Brenda Auer.
Okay.
Hello, this is Brenda Auer. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you, Ms. Auer.
Oh, good evening, everyone. I want to echo the same situation about parking. I think the wonderful drone show, by the way, amazing, was a really great example of, wow, lots of cars in one spot at one time. Also, we see just even recently with the 4th of July and the crowding on Highway 1, the parking is an issue. And I agree that we should address it now before we have to come back when it's a real problem and address it again. You know, I'm not much of an engineer, but, you know, I've been pretty successful solving problems for other people. And I've offered my expertise to the city. I extend that again. But I want to remind you, a lot of these things, these revisions, are because of errors, oversights, I've heard. Maybe we need to start there. Have more oversight, because that way things won't get left out or overlooked when they should be addressed the first time. Again, wow, what a great drone show. I didn't get to call in during public comment, but that was amazing. Thank you for your time tonight.
Thank you so much for your comments. Is there anybody else on the line?
No.
Okay, I will close the public hearing and bring it back to the council. Let me answer these questions first, or ask these questions first. Okay, so first for the Palladium, how many parking spaces and what does the street parking look like for Palladium? And can you also touch on the 2-hour parking limit that was around there?
So as part of our final project walkthrough, the project manager, the planner, in this case, actually, senior planner Kyle Bell, Mr. Kyle Bell, walked the site and compared it to the approved building permit plan set. And there were 42 parking spaces provided on site, which accommodates all of the on-site uses. That includes the commercial use. On-street parking is in addition to the minimum required number of spaces. So the entire site itself is parked, and the on-street spaces provide for additional overflow parking in the event that it's needed. So it meets our code requirements. They did take advantage of 2 reductions because of their location, their proximity to a bus stop, but it met the minimum requirements for parking pursuant to our code. As it relates to the 72-hour issue. I did bring this up following conversations about the concern prior to Planning Commission. I spoke with Chief Monroe and asked him if he felt that it would be an issue. And while he shares the same concern that I think other communities are seeing at this point in time, it's not an issue in Grover Beach. They don't respond to many parked vehicle issues within the city as it is, and he did not see a need to amend the municipal code at this time to address the 72-hour requirement. So procedurally, if there's a question or a concern from a neighbor, they'll call, they'll make the complaint, and our community service officer will go out and tag the vehicle. And if it's not moved within 72 hours, it will need to be removed, or city staff will take care of it.
So we're generally seeing the vehicles moving about, so that way they're not flagged or anything. Unless there is, correct. I mean, I've seen cases where they have been flagged because they've been sitting there for 72 hours at least. So
correct.
Okay.
But as I mentioned, my correspondence with Chief Monroe, he did not see a concern. They haven't seen many calls related to abandoned or parked vehicles over 72 hours. Lastly, a lot of folks that are living in accessory dwelling units, should this become an issue in the future, I anticipate that some of them are going to be working and they're not going to leave their vehicles just parked out on the street. But they would be subject to the same rules and enforcement that any other resident or neighbor would be subject to.
Absolutely. And as far as the two-hour, was there two-hour parking around that area on 4th and Grand?
I can't speak to that.
Okay.
Is anybody else aware of that?
No. Okay. So
sorry.
Maybe there wasn't there. That wasn't there. Okay.
That.
And then as far as the ADUs, the meter, are they installing meters in sewer for the, sorry, my question. Are they installing extra meters in the things at the ADUs?
Oh, no, for an ADU, it shares a meter with the primary residence. And I believe they're also exempt from street improvements in most cases. What was the other utility?
Meter, sewer, water.
Oh, yeah. So they meters. Share all the same utilities.
Okay.
By definition, they have to, yeah. Right? Because then they become not an ADU if they have, they're all standalone.
Correct. Well, so there's two different allowances under state law. So there are certain types of ADUs that cities are prohibited from requiring separate meters. And for other types of ADUs, the cities can require other separate meters. However, the city of Grover Beach does not require separate meters for either of those two types of ADUs.
Are they allowed to get separate meters for those ADUs?
In the city of Grover Beach, no. But that could be explored in a future update.
Okay. Okay, perfect. Were there any other questions from the council? Did you? Yeah, go ahead.
This might be a broader picture, or a broader conversation, and maybe not... maybe just to get the conversation started, what options are there for parking if we can't require parking for ADUs? And other than a parking structure, are there any other things out there that may be a possibility?
Yeah, I think we've kind of started to look into this a little bit preliminarily because we assumed that your council would have questions such as this. There's opportunities to have shared parking programs. There's opportunities for us as a city to pursue some kind of parking demand study to see if there's certain areas of our community that are having a higher impact to parking on street parking, lack of on street parking than others. I think that there are quite a few options, and we can look at other jurisdictions to help kind of drive how we might want to approach this. So again, in the effort of being as regional as possible and consistent with our neighboring jurisdictions, but it's still a little bit too much in its infancy as to what I can just present to your council now, but we have started to look into this. It's just a matter of what our data for our city says, and if we are allowed to pursue that data, and then how we create policy from that.
Thanks.
Councilmember Wyrick goes next. Okay. Oh, go ahead. Okay, go ahead, Mayor Pro Tem.
I was just questioning the electrical meter that's on the ADU that was just built next to my house. There's two different meters. You said they're not allowed to have.
Oh, I do apologize. For electric meters, they are allowed to have their
meter.
Own per structure.
Right.
So water and sewer is what I was referring to.
Mm-hmm. Just one, and you cannot have a separate water meter on an ADU.
No, you cannot.
Yeah. Thank you.
You could have a sub-meter, but that's something that, that's something that the owner property owner would choose to pursue.
Very good.
One of the parts that I just want to clarify process-wise too, that it came up from two of our public speakers on the West Grand Avenue, the crowding stuff, that's basically all the vehicles are leading to the state park's entrance on Grand Avenue to the dunes. Is that something that would be appropriate to integrate that conversation within the circulation element piece that's going on?
Can you clarify your question?
Yeah, so it was brought up that with basically and stuff, you know, it seems that with the, when the court made the decision stuff regarding the Oceana Dunes and State Parks and the Coast Commission, that, you know, right now you can see during the summer a lot of cars going on Grand Avenue, you know, west towards that place too. It does kind of get congested up too, especially as you hit the stoplight and then after the stoplight further. So would that, addressing that, be part of the circulation element discussion too? Because there's the vehicle usage.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of that is going to be taken into consideration. What policy might come out of that is still a little bit up in the air. We haven't had our traffic counts. Those are scheduled to take place, I believe, mid-September. You know, our budget on our circulation element is very limited, and so really expanding the scope above and beyond what we've already identified and is listed on our website can be quite challenging, but we'll be sure to coordinate with LLG engineers and make sure that we're looking at that so that when we do present this at the next meeting, when we have the data, we can give you some options for how we might be able to look at that and maybe help alleviate any concerns.
Okay. And then when it comes to as far as parking in general, and yes, there's the expensive parking garages over and under that everyone struggles with too. One of the dynamics that I'm always curious on is, because you mentioned as far as in just kind of residential neighborhood, you know, how much parking set aside to, when it comes to occupancy though, we don't really, like, what kind of limits exist within occupancy? Because that's where a lot of times, you know, residents say, hey, I moved in with my family and their family's bigger than mine, you know, right? And then they have multiple vehicles. How does that come into play when it comes to our rules, state rules, when it comes to parking? Because obviously and stuff, more people mean more vehicles within a single place, regardless of how big or small it is.
Mm-hmm. So occupancy is a residential occupancy is regulated kind of by at a federal level almost. There's a Keaton memo that talks about a 2+1 per bedroom as a ratio, as an appropriate ratio for rental to for landlords to rent a unit out to. For ADUs specifically, cities are not allowed to regulate the number of bedrooms per ADU except in limited cases where it pertains to size. So 800 square foot ADUs can be up to, I believe, a two bedroom, and more when you're larger than 800 square feet, it can be more. So the occupancy threshold is difficult and challenging to regulate as it's not within our controls in a local level or even a state level.
Yeah, and the city's not like the Census Bureau where it counts how many people live in each place on a regular basis, or at least every 10 years for the Census Bureau.
Correct, not like the Census Bureau. I will just add kind of one caveat, bringing it back to parking. You know, our parking regulations rely heavily on the data that's collected at a nationwide level through the Association of Transportation Engineering Manual. And so looking at the most likely occupancy of a certain type of residential unit is what drives our parking counts and standards. So a studio is less likely to have a family of five with 2 to 3 vehicles. It's more likely to have a single to dual occupancy. And the ATE will also take into consideration habits, living habits. So if you're in a studio, you are, and in an urban environment, in a mixed-use structure, taking all of that into account, you're more likely to have one vehicle rather than two, regardless of the fact that two people live in the home. So I just kind of wanted to tack that on, that that's also kind of where these parking counts come from and how they get adapted into different jurisdictions' parking regulations.
Okay, and the only other thing too is just it's a common-ish question, which is when it comes to best practices and consistency with our neighboring regions, we can set that standard though for the other neighbors to join us too, though, right? It's not a real question, I know.
Yes, we can.
Is that it? Okay. All right. Yeah, I think that one of the biggest factors into this is that I
I'm speaking for myself, but I know that a lot of our council is hearing about the parking, and we're hearing the comments. It's hard to create policy that makes sense for our community. That'll be the best possible solution for our community without the data. So I'm really excited to see the circulation element come forward, and then maybe after that go forward with some sort of parking study. Because we know that there's going to be some impacts, but I don't know how to tackle it until we know what those impacts look like. And it was very relieving to hear that Chief Monroe said that they haven't gotten a lot of calls for the for parking enforcement, so that makes me happy. But I know that there will be more, so that's okay too. And maybe people don't know that they're supposed to call when there's a car that's been sitting there forever. So.
And Mayor, if I can offer a point as well, just in addition to Ms. Martin and Mr. Bell's comments regarding parking. So the parking ordinance was last updated in 2023. Before that, we did some amendments in 2022 with the development code. Before that, we did a very comprehensive adjustment in 2018. We revamped the parking ordinance from top to bottom. As part of that, we did a very exhaustive data analysis that looked at occupancy, looked at demand, looked at counts. There's a big work effort that went into that, and I think it was very important to help frame where parking was at that time. We hear the concerns about parking. We in any kind of city where there is additional development, you do have parking become more and more of an issue. So it is on our radar. It is something that we are aware of. I think as the circulation element is brought to you and ultimately adopted by the end of this fiscal year, I can foresee parking coming up as a follow-up item. Give us some time to see how these first few developments on West Grand Avenue shake out and how the additional developments elsewhere happen. And then we can do the analysis with our work program, with some funding to help identify that, and then see what strategies make the most sense for our community. There are any number of different solutions. I used to run a parking district years ago, and so there are a lot of different approaches you can take, but there are pros and cons, and none of them are cheap. Mm-hmm. So there are different cost factors that have to be considered. The parking is on our radar. I want to emphasize that point from a staff perspective, and we are looking at proactive strategies going forward.
I mean, yeah, 10 years, that's, our community has changed a lot in the past 10 years. So seeing what fits us best is, coming up on that would be smart. But
And yeah. Keeping the, painting the parking spots that one of our community members suggested, that seems on the lowest level. Because I do see wasted parking spots all the time, because right now we can. But as we get to a place where we can't, that might be the lowest hanging fruit to maximize.
Yeah. Yeah. And as a, I come from a family who owns a lot of vehicles, like working on vehicles. So I completely understand the parking issue and coming forward with it. So that's my, any other discussion?
And one thing too is that I do think that yes, we should have a more fuller look at parking as a whole because of all the changes going on. And let's be honest, the more changes that just come down naturally in the future. I mean, it's I'm born and raised here, and a lot of things haven't changed. But yes, certain things definitely have changed too. The one thing I do hope we keep in the principle though is that public streets are for the public, because sometimes people do get confused when it comes to the parking situation. That suddenly it's like, well, this is my street. It's like, this is paid by the public too. It's used by the public. So to not lose that principle too, since it sometimes gets very convoluted and stuff too, and how people view that. And then I would hate for people to call 911 saying, well, someone's parking in my space. And it's like, well, that's part of theirs too. This isn't a private property dilemma. So to make that clear too, when these conversations move forward, I'm not sure what kind of, as far as the timing and process, what kind of direction could be done right now too, and it seems like there's concurrence from us too on this parking part, but as far as what other action we should take for this to move forward.
Those are some great comments. And I think that as of right now, I think that we're comfortable with moving forward with this. Obviously, I think we're all in concurrence, including staff, that parking will be moving forward. Parking will be a discussion, a really big discussion that we'll be having soon. So other than that, if anybody has any other comments, if not, can somebody make a motion? I know. We've already had our public comment period for this item. We've already had our public comment period before the item happened. So now we have our discussion. We're going to make the motion and then we'll move on to our next item. So
do people speak at the very beginning on all the items?
No, so there's different items, but we can talk to you more about this after our meeting, okay? And I can make more comments during my council communications, okay? I can kind of go forward with that. So any other discussion? Any other?
No.
Okay. Somebody make a move.
Okay, so I'll move to, yes, introduce the first reading of the ordinance, amend Grove Beach Municipal Code Article 9 Development Code and Resolution to Amend Local Coastal Program by revising Chapter 4, Section 4.10.015, Accessory Dwelling Units, ADU, and 2, schedule a second reading by title only to adopt the ordinance and resolution approving a local coastal program amendment at the next regularly scheduled city council meeting.
We have a motion.
I'll second.
We have a motion and a second. Can I have a roll call, please?
Councilmember Weyrich.
Yes.
Councilmember Tuggle.
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Robert.
Yes.
Mayor D.
Yes.
And let the record show, Councilmember McCory Driscoll is absent.
All right. Perfect. Thank you so much. And thank you to our staff for the presentations and your all the work on that and bringing it to planning. Thank you so much. We do not have any regular business items. Before we go on to council committee reports, though, I apologize. I meant to say during the consent agenda, we do have Ms. Odin in the audience. She is, we just approved that she will be one of our new Parks and Recreation commissioners. So we're very excited to have you. Thank you for being interested and for applying. So very excited to have you on board. I just wanted to recognize her in the audience really quick. And then, of course, Miss Anita. Yeah, Miss Anita Schauer. Yeah, she's continuing for a second term. So, all right. So now we will go on to our council committee reports. I know it's been a month since we've been back here. So if you can make your committee reports brief, but also say what you need to say. So I will start with Council Member Weyrich.
Sure. So three different assignments. So the Community Action Partnership, San Luis Obispo County, aka CAPSLO, their board of directors didn't have a regular meeting this July, so there was no meeting for that. For the Five Cities Fire Authority, aka FCFA, so that board of directors did have a regular meeting last Monday, July 21st. It was my first meeting as the rotated in chair since Arroyo Grande and Grover Beach rotate with the vice chair and chairs through its different members of the board. And in addition to some routine business, we had the approval of continuing within the federal excess personal property FEPP program for equipment, which does actually help with having different savings and cost reductions overall while still providing our authority with things and needs. And when we completed this year's weed abatement process of those hazardous fuels that by law creates a nuisance, were the ones based in Grover Beach and Royal Grande that were approved at a board meeting in April. Those property owners were notified of this, and if they hadn't abated them by the time they were gone to, then there was an assessment that we approved for the cost that did to abate them. And there was 4 properties in Grover Beach that in that case and 8 in Royal Grande. And then we also approved, it's more of a receive and file kind of, but it's state mandated to have an annual fire inspection report. And in Grover Beach, Royal Grande, and Oceano in this case. So in Grover Beach, included the 3 elementary schools, the County Office of Education's Learning Center, and 123 multifamily dwellings, such as apartments, hotels, motels in Grover Beach. And lastly, this is a point that the fire chief did note, is that 4 of our firefighters were part of the response with Madre Fire that was happening in East San Luis Obispo County earlier this month that burned almost, 81,000 acres or so. So it's good to see that our Five Cities Fire Authority is participating and supporting others in our county too in those responses. And my third one is the California Joint Powers Insurance Authority, sometimes goes by California JPIA. Our annual board of directors meeting was last Wednesday, July 23rd, and I attended on behalf of the city. The main business item was electing the board president and 3 executive committee members, all who basically were running unopposed and just continuing. And then they did present their annual risk management awards. 2 of those out of the 6 were actually presented to fellow cities in San Luis Obispo County. The municipal with police exposure for the liability category was awarded to the city of San Luis Obispo, and municipal with public safety exposure for workers' compensation was awarded to the city of Morro Bay. So it's good to see some of our neighboring cities be on top of these parts. And a couple things that are probably of interest for the council is the average member agency contribution rates in the primary liability program. It did go up a little bit from $6.72 per $100 of payroll in the 2024 through 2025 year. It's now $7.30. for 2025 through 26. But likewise, in the average member contribution rate for the primary workers' compensation program, it did go down from $4.85 to $4.57. So that does kind of show kind of where some of those areas are going amongst all the agencies that are participating, like ours too. And they did highlight actually a positive, though, is that they leveraged the Sequoia Pacific Reinsurance Company as a means to also lower the cost of coverage. And since the JPIA does its own investments that had a return of 6.24%, Sequoia had 11.6% in 2024 through 2025, which basically means member agencies like ours get a 1% to 2% discount from the JPIA's investment and 3% to 5% discount from the Sequoia's investment. So they are being very conscious about how to do other ways stuff to fund things so that our rates don't increase all the time, even if the risk environment too changes. And they do, they did emphasize that part of their style is to be proactive and working with agencies to do the programs, do the trainings, reduce the total cost of risks, and also do rapid investigations on claims so there's early resolution, which leads to lower costs. So they were very cognizant of highlighting that for all of us too. And last year I mentioned from this annual meeting that they're looking to expand their training facilities on their site. And they did say that they basically had a redesign since they had time to meet other needs. So their current site for expanding like training facilities is probably in construction, they said, February 2026, grand opening December 27. So we'll see next year on the board meeting what they have to say, but that's my committee assignment reports.
Thank you. Okay, Mayor Pro Tem. Okay, Mayor, you had no meetings? Oh my gosh. Okay. Did you say you have a lot?
No, I just needed to get it clear, so okay. I didn't make it a lot.
All right, go ahead.
All right, so Homeless Oversight Committee, quick overview of federal housing budget policies and updates. There's quite a few cuts coming our direction. They're cutting $16 million to self-sufficiency programs. And cities will not get any federal housing money if they don't subscribe to ICE rules of notification. If a non-documented person is released from incarceration. So we'll be watching that in regards to San Luis Obispo County because we have incarceration places, larger scale ones. And they are also proposing to cut funding for homeless children services, which Slo County districts get about $370,000 a year to educate homeless, to help educate homeless students. We are doing such a great job with our response to homelessness that we are actually getting a smaller piece of the pie going forward because it's based on your number of homeless and because ours has dropped. So it's kind of unintended consequences, but it is good. We are really being noted for how much work we've done to really shift moving people off the streets into temporary housing and into stable housing. And lastly, their county will be working on a MOU to deal with an encampment policy that's countywide, so it's not varying from city or from jurisdiction to jurisdiction. And then in regards to Zone 3, that's the committee that oversees or oversights, I don't think that's grammatically correct, the Lopez Lake. They have installed flow sensors, which are going to help monitor the releases as we move forward in the litigation. Simultaneously, there's a study being done on feasibility of migration that preceded the litigation, but might help support the fact that there may not be a real viable solution that's realistic. And then our water use is stable. And currently we're at 87% capacity. We are tracking to be at 67% capacity by the fall of 2026. So a year from this fall with projected rainfall and the increased release. And the committee asked for the county to come back to map what our water capacity looks like if the litigation continues or if the impacts of litigation continue or if we went back to previous release numbers so we can kind of see. So we're comparing apples to apples of what the impact of the litigation is. And that's it.
Good. Okay. And for me, I had quite a few South SLO Sanitation District meetings. We conducted the public hearing for the rate structure increase regarding wastewater treatment on July 2nd. Out of the three cities, we received 17 protests, so the board unanimously voted and approved the wastewater rate increase of $2.29 a month starting September 1st. This was also some comments. I'm very new to the board, so some comments that were made from some of the sitting board members. The rates were not raised during COVID, and it was time to get back in line with the flow of things. No pun intended? I don't know. And so we ended up approving unanimously the wastewater rate increase. So you'll see that on your bill starting September 1st. And then we also honored Rick Jackman for his 23 years of service to the district. So again, another great place where we're having longevity in our staff, and that's really cool to me. So that's it for my committee assignments. We just had those public hearings. We had a couple of them over this little month here. So we will now go on to council communications, and I'll just start with Councilmember Weirich.
So I'll try to summarize it a little quicker than usual. So as far as city government related things too, we had our summer concerts. Was it the July 13th, 20th, and 27th? Not too far and stuff at 16th Street Park, and it's been really good to see how the community's adopted and stuff and adjusted towards that area too, and obviously it had, it was mentioned stuff, Careless Whispers, Dark Desert Highway, Aaron and the Earthquakes, a lot of people attending those, even the dancing people and stuff too found their new place, and it was also good to see a lot of people in the neighborhoods and stuff to actually attend too, some who literally are just right across the street, listening to it, and others who are walking down and stuff the street to attend. And I do want to say that with the Garden Beach Police Department's National Night Out too, that happened as well. There were so many people that I only found out later who was actually there too, usually from many. Obviously and stuff, it was very well received and attended, and thanks to the Nichols Foundation for helping with our police department to support this effort too, because it's clearly, and just another thing that in the park that people are really enjoying that we could do for them, and what a reception I got from a lot of people later on going like, that was awesome, since they don't see it around. And then a couple little things too is the Filipino community center in Grove Beach, they did have their annual cultural night and scholarships awards on Saturday, July 12th, and there was, as they always do, many different cultural presentations and stuff and dances to share their heritage, and their keynote speaker had a pretty inspirational message. I was quite impressed for the scholarship recipients, and four of those graduates were from Royal Granite High School, so yes, go Eagles. I know, small town kid I am, so that's all I'm going to share. I'm sure Mayor Pro Tem Robert could talk about that. Those pancakes, though.
I know, that's great. All right, Councilmember Tuggle.
I just have two shout outs for staff for my council comments, and in both cases people came to me to say way to go. So I had a builder reach out to me and let me know that he was thoroughly impressed with our community development director. His exact words were she is competent and reasonable. I said, okay, I'll take that. And then he said, I would tell her myself, but then I think she'll think I want a favor. And I just wanted her to know she's doing a good job. So I said, I would pass that on. And then I had another neighbor reach out to me and thank me. Again, not for me, it's staff, but I said I'd pass it on. We have a neighbor that has been having garage sales every week and food and lots of stuff. And they reached out to code enforcement, and that got addressed, and I think in the best way that it can. And the neighborhood left feeling heard and supported. And so thank you again, staff. And I know we're down code enforcement, so that's even more impressive.
Mayor Pro Tem.
Okay, this Sunday's pancake breakfast at the Grange, 8 to 11. Come on, I think I made 600 or 700 last month.
Oh my gosh.
So let's see if we can make some more. And the Exploration Discovery Center this Saturday, August 2nd, will have the Zoo to You coming.
I'm not sure what animals they're bringing, but they bring some pretty cool animals the kids can see, and they explain it to them what they are. And right after that, same place, Discovery Center, Ramona and 9th Street, they're going to have a small children's business fair from 11 to 1, and there's going to be some young entrepreneurs selling their wares. So come over there and buy some wares. They also are ready to open the new cultural center, which Debbie creates a whole cultural center there about four times a year. And, oops, just disappeared. And it's Japan. So they're going to have chopsticks and origami. And they also have some kimonos for the kids to try on. That's going to be fun. So, you know, they get about over 100 kids there a day now going there. Yeah, so it's been a real big success for the community. Good. So thank you for everyone involved in that. We get a lot of volunteers. And that's it.
Good. Okay. Mine's a little bit longer. Sorry, everybody. Over the little break that we had, which, of course, I keep saying break, but we didn't have a break. We were still working. Everybody was still working and going out there, obviously. It was just break from council meetings. So I went out and and we're off. Thank you. So I went and spoke to Five Cities Men's Club. I went to the Grover Beach Rotary Demotion. Installation, is that what it's called? Demotion? Yes. Party. We had coffee with council, attended the Grover Beach business meeting, which I thought was great because we talked about our block party, which I'll talk about in a second. I did two mayor's commendations, one of them for the Caffeinated Cat Cafe, who celebrated having adopted out over 100 cats since they've opened in December. So just I just think that's a huge accomplishment. And then of course the 1 year anniversary for Baleko on Barca with Five Cities Homeless Coalition and their service that they provide to our community. We were just talking about homelessness, so they do a lot. The drone show was just absolutely phenomenal. I also found out who was there after the fact because there were so many people there. We just couldn't see everybody. Yeah, and then, of course, I am excited for, I was at my business today, and somebody from the chamber came by and brought me a flyer for the, can you see it on the screen? the flyer for the West Grand Block Party, the Save the Date, which I'm sure our city manager will speak to maybe in a couple minutes. But very excited. We had some of the businesses at the Grover Beach business meeting put on by the chamber to give us input, some ideas, and some other information on what we could do for this block party. I also have two shout outs for our staff. One of them is for the Parks and Rec staff. I was at the summer concert yesterday and just everybody was so impressed with how we've really upgraded our summer concert series. And I mean, there's tons of dancers out there. The last weekend we had 2,400 people at our concert. So it just shows that we're doing something right. So great job to the Parks and Rec staff, as well as the commission for supporting, and all that kind of stuff. So just the vendors are having a good time. Everybody's having a good time. In addition to that, we also yesterday at the concert, I also received a comment for our code enforcement team as well, saying that they've been very helpful and transparent, and the development, just that entire team of staff has been phenomenal in working with this individual. So I just want to give a massive shout out. It's really hard to receive a notice saying that you're out of code on something, and they were saying that they were it was received with a smiling face and just really positivity, even though somebody's telling you that you're out of code on something. So just great job to our code enforcement. And that's it for my council communications. So we will now move on. Did everybody go? Yes. Okay. We will now move on to our city manager's reports and comments. Your turn now.
Thank you, Mayor. Good evening once again, Mayor and council members. Good to see you all here in this setting after our month off from council meetings. So first, building on the mayor's comment, we are very pleased to announce that on Saturday, September 20th, from 12 o'clock to 3 o'clock, we'll hold the first ever West Grand Block Party as a way to celebrate our emerging West Grand Avenue corridor, the beautiful streetscape project that is now completed, including the very bright green palm trees that are on the streetscape. As we said, they were in transplant shock. And when they were trimmed and unleashed last week, voila, they're now beautifully green palm trees. So it's great to see the colors I've gotten so many positive comments from people, locals, visitors, about how beautiful that section is. So kudos to your council and previous councils for your leadership and vision for seeing that project through. So we're looking forward to celebrating the block. It's going to be a relatively small event from 5th Street to 7th Street, but we are closing the street for that 3-hour period and a couple hours before and after to set up. But it'll have local vendors, it'll have some activities. It's really a local-themed event to celebrate West Grand Avenue. Much more information to come. The Chamber and the City are co-leading this effort. I want to thank the Mayor, our Community Service Supervisor Larry Kim, Assistant City Manager Kristen Erickson for their leadership on helping pull this together. Much more information to come. Speaking of summer events, this is a summer of fun, so we have a lot of great events. You've all highlighted those already with our summer concerts and the River Beach Night Out. Just tremendous community pride, tremendous community activity, and all these events are free. Free, family-friendly events to offer such a benefit for our community. And at the Night Out event, 4,000 people were there, and afterwards, people just filtered out. There weren't traffic issues, there weren't parking issues, people just left. And they filtered out really quickly, given the number of people at the park. So just a testament to how we can have these kind of events, and such a great kudos to our police department for their tremendous work putting on the event, led by our police chief, Jim Monroe, funded by the Nichols Foundation, as well as community services staff, public works staff. It really was a full team effort. And your council's comments tonight about our staff team really underscore how magnificent our staff is. I'm very privileged to serve in my capacity, working with such an esteemed group of colleagues, serving Grover Beach each and every day. So lastly, I'll just say that our next council meeting after tonight is going to be August 25th, so we're taking another month off from the council schedule to provide council members and lead staff some opportunities for time off and working on other things, but we'll be back here again on Monday, August 25th. Thank you.
Perfect. Okay. We will now go on to city attorney's reports, comments, and lead us into closed session.
Thank you, Mayor and Council. Nothing to report. However, I will take us into closed session. We have conference with legal counsel, anticipated litigation, significant exposure to litigation pursuant to paragraph 2 or 3 of subdivision D of Government Code Section 54956.9, two cases.
All right, thank you. I will now open for public comment on this item, the closed session. Seeing nobody come forward, is it on this litigation item? It's on this litigation item regarding the subdivision? Okay, well then you can come up and make your comment, but if it's against if it's about anything else, I'll have to redirect you.
I had a question for Mr. Lomelli. On the next, right below, the two cases that are named by parties, are they the same cases or are they different? The issue, the question I have is why the case name or the party names are not included in the closed items, or are they? Do you see what I mean? There are two parties named below.
I'll have him answer that question once you conclude. Thank you so much. Okay, any other public comment on this item? Is there anybody on the line for this item?
No, there's not.
All right, Mr. Lomelli, may you answer that question, please?
Yes, so dependent on the items that will be discussed, that is incumbent upon when we would list the case names of the individuals who are involved, particularly if the reference is to those cases at the beginning of the agenda. The case name was provided because it is an existing litigation. When closed session involves litigation, significant threat of litigation, we would not name the parties at that time.
Okay. Thank you so much. All right. So we will now go into closed session announcements. Thank you so much for coming out here.